This is the American dream of freedom on wheels. An automotive age, traveling on time-saving superhighways. Futurama's free-flowing channels of concrete and steel. We have become the nation on wheels, with more motorized mobility than ever dreamed of before. Though we have the greatest highway system in all the world, it can't carry the mounting traffic of our growing greatness.
Our growing greatness. Yes, this is Bikescape, bringing you another edition in a series of podcasts about bikes and bike culture and just space, bikes and space. We're going to talk tonight about Robert Moses.
Robert Moses of New York.
Here he is, speaking in front of a GM podium.
Robert Moses, New York City construction coordinator, is a world-famous highway planner, a man who knows his business.
No stroke of genius, no brilliant device, no magic will suddenly produce roads commensurate with cars.
Yeah, roads commensurate with cars. That was it. That was his philosophy in a nutshell. He did not think of roads as a place where community happened. When he looked at the space that a road occupied, just to look at it in Bikescape terms, the space was not a space of community. It was a space where people moved about in cars, and he looked at cities as not a place where community happened, where people got together to create community and to live and grow together. He looked at it as this place where people could live in an orderly way, and they would go on pleasure drives, and it had this Le Corbusierian idea of tall red brick towers, chock-a-block with housing, you know, stacked up to the sky with not that I'm against towers, but he would surround them by playgrounds, concrete playgrounds, and connect them by freeways. So he ran the New York, just about any construction project in New York for 44 years, from 1924 up until 1968, when he was finally forced out. He had his hand on everything. He had more to do with the way you live now than any other American in history. And I'm talking, you know, more than Franklin Roosevelt and his New Deal. I mean, when you sit out on a freeway in traffic and you're headed from Ventura to Hollywood, or when you're stuck on the Beltway in Washington, D.C., you know, waiting through traffic, this is the man you have to thank for that. This was the guy who brought about car culture as we know it today. His name was Robert Moses. You may not have heard of him, but he came about 1924. He got his first job working for the government, and he wrote a report that he wanted to consolidate a bunch of city agencies together. Let me just go back to what he's done. You know, in New York, New York City was the very first automobile city. When you think of automobile cities, you often think of, you know, Phoenix or, of course, Los Angeles or Atlanta, you know, cities that grew up around the automobile. But New York was already a city, and it was a city that was built on neighborhoods, hundreds of neighborhoods all over the place. Brownstone buildings with steps going down to the street. Everybody faced the street. People would hang out on the street. You know that when it was hot out, they would open up. You know, you hear these stories: playing stickball, opening up a fire hydrant to cool off. They had the subway to get around. Before the subway, it was pretty hard to get from one end of New York to another. But once the subway went in, it was easy to get around. And it was a city of public transportation, a city of communities. But his idea was different from that. He thought that was kind of outmoded. And he was a true believer in this. He wasn't evil. He was pretty right-wing. But he thought this was progress. And he brought a lot of people along with him for a long period of time. And anybody who was against him was shut out pretty quickly. He said, those who can build and those who can't, criticize. And he changed the face of the state of New York. He built the Triborough Bridge, Jones Beach State Park, Verrazano Narrows Bridge, the West Side Highway, the Long Island Parkway System, Niagara and St. Lawrence power projects. He built all of that and a lot more, too. He built 658 playgrounds in New York, 416 miles of parkway and 13 bridges. But, you know, it wasn't just that he was a great builder. He was known as a master builder, but he had a major influence on the basic shape of the American city in the 20th century, and well into the 21st, I'm sure. He had this idea of cities of highways and towers. This was later discredited, but at the time when he was promulgating the idea, it was widely accepted as the future. You listen to that sound clip from an old GM movie that I just played, an old General Motors movie to arouse the public, as they said, to get people to pay taxes to build a interstate highway system. The future isn't what it used to be. People thought that this was the future, and people were entranced by it. You know, after World War II, we were running the world, and things were neglected during the war, and Robert Moses was the man to change all that. So to do so, this is how he did it. He held several appointed offices at once. At one point, he occupied 12 positions simultaneously, including that of the New York City Parks Commissioner, the head of the State Parks Council. You know, so he was on the city level and the state level, and he was the head of the State Power Commission and chairman of the Triborough Bridge and Tunnel Authority. That was the clincher right there. We'll come back to that later. He was close to a number of city, state, federal officials. The governors were more in debt to him than he was into them. It was amazing because he controlled the purse strings. We'll get to that a little bit later. And it wasn't until 1962 that he was brought down. You know, there was a backlash. He angered a few people, and he built freeways. He displaced thousands of people. He built freeways right through neighborhoods in New York, and he was ready to build more. But he, you know, until the preservation-oriented approaches that, you know, came out in the 60s, you know, started to you know, when people started seeing the old historical stuff coming down and watching what was happening to the city, that's when they began the backlash. But, you know, he callously took residents out of neighborhoods. Urban renewal was his big thing. Yeah, he destroyed the fabric of countless neighborhoods and put up these brick towers. And the way he did it, we'll get back to that now, he was a great drafter of legislation. And what he did was he wrote legislation for, he was in with the governor, and he was in with Governor Smith in the 20s. And Smith is the guy that got him into power in the beginning, but after that, everybody else just had to live with him. He used this talent of writing great legislation to create these public authorities. He consolidated public authorities into single things, and the public authority existed already, the port authorities and the Triborough Bridge authority, but he consolidated them into these autonomous organizations that they would do all the public works, building the bridges, the baseball stadiums. He built Shea Stadium. He built the World Trade Center. I mean, even up until then, they were autonomous organizations, and they would issue bonds to raise their money. And when they built the Triborough Bridge, which is actually three bridges connecting Brooklyn and Queens and the Bronx and Manhattan, people pay tolls when they get on them. To this day, the people pay tolls there, and that money goes into the Triborough Bridge Authority. And so that, you know, in a city that's chronically broke all through history, that, you know, New York has always had a problem with money, This is where the money for all the big projects came from, and he had his hands on the purse strings. So anything that had to, that was going to get built, had to be built with his approval, and most of the stuff came out, most of the stuff that was built for 44 years came out of his office. So you know, he brought in vast revenues, vast revenues, and he could control it himself. And so he focused his public works projects on, you know, increasing suburbanization and the use of the automobile. The idea that the highways within the city were more for the convenience of the suburban automobile users, not for the inner city people. As Lewis Mumford said, you know, he just thought of, I'm paraphrasing, but he just thought of Brooklyn, for instance, as a place you just drive across. You know, he didn't think of it as a neighborhood, a bunch of neighborhoods. Let's skip ahead my notes here a little bit. Yeah, so he started out with Jones Beach, and, you know, he started out as a populist. People loved Jones Beach. There was a lot of opposition, you know, from the rich people, where he wanted to build the, you know, they were going to bring in the riffraff, the rabble, they called it, and to use this this beach, you know, with these unbelievably beautiful cabanas. He spent tons of money in those days on this stuff, but they had to build roads to get there, and they had to build roads and bring them into the rich people's neighborhood, and so people liked it. And you know, when the rich people complained to the governor about bringing in the rabble, what was it, the governor said, "A rabble, that's me you're talking about," you know. But, you know, as it turns out, he was a right-wing fucker. I mean, let's face it, you know, he ran for governor. The one time that he actually ran for elected office, he ran for governor, and he lost bigger than ever. He just trashed his opponent, and he blew it. He was much better at working behind the scenes and controlling the purse strings. And sometimes, you know, there were these long court fights, you know, even with Jones Beach, you know, the people would sue him, but his philosophy, and he was right, is he said, once you sink that first stake, they'll never make you pull it up. And that's a method that's used to this day. You know, Golden Gate Park here in San Francisco, they're building a garage in the park, and that a lot of people can't stand that garage, the idea of it, and there have been lawsuits, there's lawsuits pending even, I think it's been resolved now, but by the time they did get resolved, and the thing was half built, so there wasn't much anybody could do about it. So that was basically what his thing. He drafted park legislation with all sorts of stuff. So in the 30s, he built he actually, you know, what's interesting is he never drove a car himself. He rode in a limo, and sometimes he would ride in a fleet of two limos together. He'd have meetings in his limo. He was a very efficient man, very busy, worked long hours. I mean, he did like huge amounts of stuff. I mean, in the 30s, he built hundreds of playgrounds. He built 10 swimming pool complexes, only one in a poor neighborhood, and he kept the water kind of cold because he didn't want the wrong kind. He was a racist, and he didn't think that black people would like to swim in cold water. So he built one swimming pool in the black neighborhoods, and the rest of them were all in the richer neighborhoods. But in the 30s, he built all the swimming pools. He built the Grand Central Parkway, the Interboro, the Laurelton, the Gowanus, the Henry Hudson Parkways. He built the Bronx Whitestone Bridge and the West Side Highway and the 79th Street Boat Basin. And a lot of that stuff that he did in the 30s, it was his signature. Most of his public housing was designed in like this bland style of architecture, you know, monotonous, sterile towers, open space, a lot of parking. And this is, you know, mostly for low-income residents. He tore, you know, urban renewal. He just tore through these neighborhoods, just, you know, and just kicked all the people out. And he basically said, you can't make an omelet without breaking eggs, and you can't remove a ghetto without like displacing, you know, kicking people out of the neighborhood. And so he basically used this model of the, you know, Le Corbusier, who wrote, you know, I'll put some links on the web to him. You can do some research about him. He was one of the great thinkers of the early 20th century, right up there with Freud, I would think. And he had plans for rebuilding Paris in much the same way. You know, city of towers surrounded by parks, divided by highways, and no traditional streets. Just very super modern. So, you know, he reached an architectural plateau, and then people started to get a little disgusted with him. He got into a fight with the New York Shakespeare Festival, and Then there were a lot of community protests over the Cross Bronx Expressway route that he wanted required 1,500 apartments and a 1 mile stretch to get demolished just in that one mile stretch. There was he wanted to build a parking lot in the middle of the I want to say Golden Gate Park, Central Park, in the middle of what's a playground, is still a playground. He wanted to build a mid-Manhattan expressway and a lower Manhattan expressway that luckily never got built, but they would have gone through, Greenwich Village. They'd be a freeway where Greenwich Village is now. He kind of got brought down by the Manhattan Town urban renewal scandals back in the 50s. That was the beginning of his downfall. These private developers were given all these tenements where they were sold on a cheaply reduced rate, all these tenements with the idea that they would be cleared and new housing would be erected. And they kept the tenements going and they just sucked up all the money and rented the place out, rented the apartments out. Anyway, in 1959, he sort of became more of a figurehead, and that was it for him. But by then, the horses were out of the barn, and there wasn't much that could be done. But there's a good article on Wikipedia about him. You can check that out. There's a link. The Brooklyn Battery Tunnel was something that he wanted to have a bridge that would have gone right into Battery Park, which is a kind of a nice park now. You can catch a ferry there. They ended up with a tunnel. That's not what he wanted. But even though he... So basically, post-war city planning was... after World War II, this was his thing. This was all his show. So something to check out, how car culture got the way it did. He didn't really start, car culture... but he cleared the way, and as Wikipedia says, figuratively speaking, but literally also, I suppose, the idea that urban and suburban space are basically for the automobile. And there's an interesting book. One book was written about him. Robert Caro wrote a book, The Power Broker, and he wrote another book himself. Jane Jacobs criticized him pretty good in The Death and Life of Great American Cities, and that book was pretty much instrumental in turning public opinion among planners against him. So that came about around the same time when he demolished the old Penn Station, Pennsylvania Station, and then built the new Penn Station over in Chelsea, and boy, what a terrible place that is. If you've ever been stuck in the warrens of Penn Station... But his legacy was that there was just no sense of place. There was no sense of place. The space that was left over, there was no there there. That's what they say about Oakland, and that's the case. That's the kind, when you think of the worst things in here's a clip about the Gowanus Expressway.
The Gowanus Expressway speeds over a densely populated area of Brooklyn without disturbing life below.
Yeah, right.
To deliver through traffic to the underwater tunnel to Manhattan. Connecting from the north, a four-story street will soon be open, with promenade for pedestrians on top, local traffic on the bottom, and two one-way expressways in between.
A little lip service to pedestrians.
Here is four-story proof that our modern highway planners with imagine...
Wait a second. Did he say four stories? A four-story freeway going through a neighborhood in Brooklyn and basically not disturbing anything underneath there, so they say.
Imagination and public support can solve our traffic problems.
Yeah, so... They were looking for public support. Now, I think if you look at my show notes over at bikescape.blogspot.com, you'll see some links to... I'm going to put a link to a traffic cam, and you can see what the Gowanus looks like these days. It's pretty nasty. But here, I have something else to listen to. This is from that GM, the General Motors movie. Give give yourself the green light. This is to encourage people to give money, to pay taxes, to build freeways.
Will you stop honking, Mac? We ain't going nowhere.
This is Agony Alley. Morning rush and evening wait. Fight your way home from work. You think you got it made. Good job. Car nearly paid for. So you get a little home in the suburbs. Away from the city smoke. Out from the shadows of the factory. Into the sun and clean air. Raise a few kids, some flowers and vegetables. The big dream coming true. But it backfires into a pipe dream. Exhaust pipe dream. Every night it takes longer to get home, wasting more time and gasoline. No wonder everybody's acting so nervous. What's a citizen gonna do?
It's funny, what is a citizen gonna do? We're so kind of at that point right now, aren't we? I don't know about where you live, but the freeways are pretty much choked here. You know, people complain all the time, people who don't bike. It's pretty amazing that people still buy into this stuff, you know? I mean, look, we're selling SUVs. Things really haven't changed since the 1940s when this movie was made. And people still think the way to deal with it is to build more roads and to widen the roads we have now and just increase capacity. And you know, it's just a proven fact that if you build it, they'll come. It's, you know, what some more enlightened traffic engineers call induced congestion that's caused by, you know, you build a road and it fills up. You widen that road, it fills up even more. And it's happened over and over again. Anyway, so the lack of the sense of space and that's been the legacy. And now you know a little bit about how we got to this point. And so if you ever think like you're a little quixotic, you know, tilting at windmills as a bicyclist activist, looking towards the future, and people think you're crazy. What do you want to do? Outlaw cars? This is a car culture. How can you get rid of cars? This is how it happened, and you're not going to be able to undo what happened and build something better until you learn how things happened. And Robert Moses is a key figure in history that we really need to learn about. If you haven't heard of him yet, you should learn about him now. And there's plenty of stuff out there on the net. And if you really feel ambitious, you can read the Caro book, which I will provide a link to. I'm going to try and find a place to buy it besides Amazon, but it may be an Amazon link by the time I get this up. Anyway, that's it. And now we're going to go to something completely different. That's the Desperate Bicyclists. 1970s music. To my mouse clicking. That music was brought to me by this show out of London. I got an email from, or a comment on my blog from this guy, Jack Thurston, who does a show called Bike Show, The Bike Show, on Resonance FM Radio. It's an on-the-air radio show, but I think he's beginning to podcast it now. Look on the blog. There's a link to his archive shows. I was talking a couple weeks ago about how the radio shows, the podcasts, there's five or six of them out there on iPod or in the bicycle category, each one completely different from the other one. There's Club Ride, there's a show about Club Ride out of Minnesota, there's a show about, well, there's Bikescape, about bike culture and space and bikes, and there's this guy, Five Speed Cassette, who does shows about Formula One racing and bicycle racing and religion and culture, all so many different kinds of bizarre bicycle shows, and mine is not excluded from the bizarre category. I realize it's weird, and but then there's this other guy, Jack, in London. He's 6,000 miles from me, but he is my kindred spirit. You know, he has ideas before I have them. But they're the same ideas I was about to have. And some of the ideas I already had, and he didn't steal them. But now I can't do them, because he's already done them, damn it. So I really encourage you to listen to his show. It's really great. It's on Resonance FM Radio. And the bike show is, and he does a great show, an episode about the Paris-Roubaix bike race, where they race in the rain over cobblestones and mud. And, you know, there's a movie called Weekend in Hell about it, which I've never seen, but I'd like to now that I've heard about it. And he covers it the way I would. He covers the beer. He covers the Belgian beer. He covers the barbecue. And, he also talks about the race, and, you know, actually when he's watching the race, it was hours before he even knew who won, and I don't think he even really cared. He was putting his bets on the English guy, you know, English nationalist that he must be, but, you know, I don't think he really cared one way or another who won. He was just into the amazing hellishness of it all, that people would choose to do a race like this. Anyway, so, and he also does another episode about where he goes for a bike ride, just like I do, and but he goes with a psychologist, and he talks about how, this psychologist talks about how bicyclists go into an alpha state when they're on their bike. Any kind of repetitive, cyclical, nonstop exercise creates an alpha state, and you get some great creative thinking done. Although I've learned that when you're podcasting, you really should pull over to talk, because you can think a lot better. More focused anyway. Maybe not as creative, but you're more focused when you pull over. quick look at the stop babbling, and I'm going to look at what's going on. Bike to Work Day in San Francisco is May 19th. So if you don't usually ride, definitely ride that day. The weather's nice. It's going to be nice, I'm sure. And the rain has pretty much stopped. I'm sure it's not going to rain again. I've said this before. Stop by an Energizer station, pick up a banana, talk to your fellow cyclists, join the bike coalition, some kind of event of your own, get your bike tuned up in a free tune-up station, go to the Bike Away From Work party that's coming up too. We just had Bike Town, they gave away 50 giant commuter bikes to 50 people. That's very cool. That was last Friday. Petrillo Hill, Fran Taylor, a great fighter, for Potrero Hill is been working really hard on Potrero Hill bike lanes and traffic calming. You can contact her and get a lighthearted guide to encourage Hill residents to try getting around on two wheels. And she's a great person. You should get to know her if you live in town. Volunteer night, 5 to 8 p.m. at the SFBC, 995 Market Street on the 15th floor at 6th Street. They want a special volunteer night. They need a pre-bike-to-work bag stuffing party. Wait, what day is that? That would be 5/19 is bike day, so this would be... Never mind, that already happened. We'll just skip over that. Let's see, May 16th, critical hearing for Petro traffic calming and bike lanes. 1 p.m. City Hall, room 263. Street skills class, yada, yada, yada. A key vote on the bike plan, part 1. 1 p.m. City Hall, room 263. Bike supporters' voices are needed. Bike supporters' voices are needed at this important Board of Supervisors Land Use Committee hearing to consider the first part or policy document of the long-awaited city bicycle plan. This has been going on for years. It's gonna happen. After 2 years of public outreach and planning, this will finally be voted on by the Board of Supervisors. That's our city council here. If it passes, important policies for better biking, including setting a goal for 10% trips by bike by 2010, will become part of San Francisco's official city policy. Please come to the hearing. To find out more, see www.bicycle.sfgov.org or contact Lee at the Bike Coalition at 431-BIKE. Okay, that's the Biker Bulletin from the Bike Coalition. Time's up. They got Ladies Bicycle Repair Night every Monday at 6 p.m. Every Tuesday, everybody else gets a bike repair workshop. I'm sure the ladies are welcome to the ladies. At the same place, Time's Up Space, 49 East Houston between Mott and Mulberry. They got a movie night, May 19th, 8 p.m., WMD, the movie, at the Time's Up Space. There's a bicycle film festival. Wait, what happened to it? There it is. It started on May 12th yesterday, but it's going on till Sunday, May 15th, so this weekend. You know, if you're hearing this before soon, try and get down there. It's at the mostly happening at the Anthology Film Archives, 32nd Avenue at 2nd Street. The Prospect Park Traffic Calming Ride, Grand Army Plaza, entrance to Prospect Park, Friday. Oh, it's over, another one. That's too bad. Brooklyn Critical Mass was today also, Friday. Let's see, let's just skip ahead. I'm sorry about this, I'm not prepared like I should be. Let's see, Brooklyn Critical Mass, I got through that. Saturday, the Prospect Park Moonlight Ride, we already went through that. Okay, well, that's about it for New York. May 20th, oh yeah, I gotta do this. May 20th, Friday at 7:30 p.m., join us for a twilight tour of East River bridges through three boroughs and over the Queensboro, Pulaski, Williamsburg, Manhattan, and Brooklyn bridges. This unique ride highlights stunning vistas, takes in the glorious sunset of a Manhattan backdrop. You can see what Robert Moses didn't ruin. Celebrates the bridge access for bicyclists and pedestrians and provides a brief history of the bridges and waterways. Bring lights and a snack and money to buy a snack. It's about 15 miles. Ride leaders will bring riders back to Tramway Plaza, which is where it starts, Friday, May 20th at 7:30 p.m., Tramway Plaza, 2nd Avenue at 60th Street in Manhattan, uptown, midtown. Let's see, on May 21st, the Spring Garden Ride, Washington Square Park, Inner Circle, Manhattan. Join in Earth Celebration's Rite of Spring pageant. Support the gardens by seeing some of Lower East Side's best green sites. Slow cruise with frequent stops at local community gardens. We did that during Bike Summer 1 year, and it was very nice. Very nice. They have some beautiful gardens there in New York. And one other thing, if you would like to live in beautiful Marin County, you can soak in a hot tub every night. You can live the good life in Marin County. The Marin County Bicycle Coalition is looking for a development director. So give them a call if you're interested. They want somebody who's responsible for coordinating fundraising efforts and executive oversight, executive director oversight, and all that kind of stuff. 20 hours a week, partial health benefits. You need 2 to 4 hours in development, fundraising experience, yada, yada, yada. Call them up. I'll leave a link. So they're going to be, the applications are due Monday, May 30th. So if you're looking for that kind of a job, that's what you should look for. Let's see. We still got the bluegrass music playing there. I am going to turn it off. And sorry about the clunkiness here. And I'm going to play one last bicycle song to bid you goodbye. If I can find it. Let's see here. Sorry, I'm still not organized. Bikescape music. There we go. Do-do-do. Here we go. The Archies. A little bubblegum. Bicycles, roller skates, and you. Gonna have to do a show on bike dating one of these days. I'll have to talk my wife into doing a podcast during a date. I don't know if she'll be up for that. Every day I wake up with a happy smile on my face. Cause I'm so glad to be a member of the human race. I ain't gotta die, but I'm the richest guy. So I just want to remind you, Bikescape at sbcglobal.net. Send us your emails, send me your emails, let me know what you think. Sound quality, if you think it's crappy sound quality, well, I'm broke. You can send me a mic if you have a lot of money. I could use a nice USB mic if anybody out there wants to donate one. Send me an email if you're interested in doing that. If you have any other comments about the show, anything you'd like me to do in the show, anything you'd like me to cover, anybody you think I should interview, we have Skype here. We can talk. I can talk to anybody in the world. And you can leave your comments at the blog, bikescape.blogspot.com. And thank you very much for listening. And spread the word about Bikescape. Get this word around. I'm really enjoying making these shows, and I sure hope a lot of you are listening. You know, I look at the stats, and I can't figure it out. I have no idea how many people are listening. I think it's somewhere about 100 or so, but it could be 1,000. I don't know. Some shows have been downloaded 500-600 times, and other shows not very many times, so it's kind of hard to tell. I think my numbers are just skewed. I don't really know what's going on. But I don't care. I'm enjoying doing it, and I know some people are listening, and I'm really enjoying getting letters from Florida and London and France and all over the place, so keep listening, spread the word, and thank you.